Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's amazing, but not surprising. It's a new category I'm introducing on this week's broadcast because it's a category that seems to describe more and more of what one comes across, at least in this century. For example, the drowning of a major American city, the rendering homeless of about, 250,000 people could be attributable to something as simple as screwing up transferring soil boring data. Yeah, they can even bore soil. That's how good engineers are these days. No, a transfer of soil boring data from one chart to another. This is from the New Orleans Times-Picayune. A cross-section drawing in the project design of the 17th Street Canal flood wall, that was the one that breached and flooded central New Orleans, in those documents shows a weak layer of peaty soils, peaty, running between 11 feet and 15 feet below sea level in the area that failed. Information in the individual soil borings that were used to draw the cross-sections show the peaty layer extending as deep as 30 feet below sea level. Investigators said their own borings taken at the site this week confirm it was and is 30 feet, leading them to believe that designers used the flawed cross-section drawing to set the sheet pilings beneath the flood walls at 17 and a half feet below sea level, a choice that allowed water to migrate to the land side of the wall, causing the breach. Quote, it's pretty obvious the depth of the organic deposit shown in that cross-section is what determined the sheet piling depth for the whole canal. So says J. David Rogers, a member of the National Science Foundation team investigating the breach and a leading authority on levee failures. Yeah, you can have a career in that. Where are the leading authorities in television show failures, ladies and gentlemen? That should be a career. Anyway, back to Dr. Rogers. Quote, they saw this marshy deposit. They recognized it as potentially dangerous, so they specified sheet piles that went just beyond the bottom of that line. So it's easy to deduce, he says, that if they saw that peat layer going to 30 feet, they would have placed the piling at least that deep. And it appears pretty clear, he concludes, at this point, that the transfer of the boring data to the cross-section is where the ball might have gotten dropped, unquote. The length of those sheet pilings has been a focal point of investigators since they concluded the wall collapsed before it was overtopped by water. Engineers say the depth of the sheet piles was too shallow for the notoriously porous soils in what was mainly swamp just 100 years ago. Investigators have also been puzzled by what they say are obvious engineering errors because the firms involved were experienced and reputable in their fields. Work by the National Science Foundation team may have uncovered that small mistake that had the huge impact. The companies have declined to comment. Rogers said soil work always involves a lot of judgment calls and assumptions because geotechnical engineers never have a complete picture of what's below the ground. The official record of the project shows that a company called Eustace Engineering did the soil borings. The cross-section drawing carries the logo of the Corps, Army Corps of Engineers. But Rogers said it's common practice for the Corps to sign documents compiled by consulting firms. A Corps spokesperson was unable to respond to a request for information. It's a pretty significant finding, says Rogers, of the discrepancy, adding that the marshy layer that extended below the sheet piling was so porous it was almost completely saturated in the core samples that were retrieved. Without the sheet piling blocking that layer, he said, it's like having, quote, a big pipe that can convey water from one side of the canal to the other, unquote. Rogers said his team could see no clear reason for the discrepancy when the data was transferred from the boring logs to the project cross-section. So, pretty simple explanation. Just, bad copy. And a city drowns. Hello, welcome to the show.
My hotel, my oasis on the road to despair, temporary tomb, my hotel, sanctuary from the forces of care. Make up my room. Is the contract wrong? Is the sound check long? I don't mind. Cause I know a place full of time and place. And you can go there with me if you promise not to stay. Tiptoe away. And in the morning I will be gone too. My home. Different city, unpronounceable name. Breakfast was superb. My hotel. Different money, different folks, but the same. Please do not disturb.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, actually in Detroit right now. It's hard to believe, isn't it? I thought I could get a good job at Ford, I hear. But I'm welcoming you to this edition of the show, actually before I left for Detroit. Because, you know, I didn't feel like Detroit was a Le Show kind of place. I have done the program from there. Anyway, some news about this war that we have, some of it outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, for your listening pleasure. But first, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said this week the Pentagon had not done a good job in the information war, saying U.S. personnel felt constrained, partly due to fear of criticism in the media. That's right. The media have scared the military. This is an area that we don't do well. We know we don't do well. Rumsfeld told a Pentagon briefing referring to information ops and psychological warfare. How do we compete in this struggle in a way that can counter the ability of the enemy to lie, which we can't do? Unquote. Don't cry for him, America. He'll find a way to lie. No, maybe he won't. Or maybe he will. from the Financial Times, not a liberal newspaper in England. Many of the commanders on the ground in Iraq feel they're achieving something by gaining the trust of the local population and working closely with the new Iraqi army. Some say that given one or two more years of the same kind of effort, the Iraqi security forces will be able to stand on their own feet. But, says the newspaper, some of the more thoughtful and more senior officers usually admit, after some reflection, that it is overly optimistic to think the United States can change patterns that have been established over centuries. The expression of doubt comes as the army and the whole of the U.S. operation in Iraq come under criticism from unexpected quarters. A poll in Military Times last month showed that within the military, support for the way the war is being waged is crumbling. And British Army Brigadier Nigel Aylwin Foster criticized the U.S. forces, saying they showed little sensitivity to the cultural makeup of Iraq. And they're wearing makeup. And the junior officers painted too bright a picture of the situation to their superiors. Much of the criticism is aimed at a perceived lack of American understanding of the complexity of the situation. You know what I say? Complexity, complexity? But I'm an American. What do you expect? In Baghdad, a senior Western diplomat says this is because Americans in Iraq maintain an often inevitable distance from the local population, cooped up in their large green zone or their bases throughout the country. They only venture out heavily armed. This may be a slightly exaggerated picture, but on a military flight into Baghdad from the Jordanian capital, evidence of this dynamic can be seen. The Americans have built a virtual parallel country in Iraq that most soldiers and American civilians never have to leave. Quote, I'm not in Iraq, says one soldier in Balad. This is the United States of Iraq. Unquote. The Financial Times. The Guardian in England says the Bush administration is planning to spend $120 billion on the Iraq and Afghani wars this year, bringing their total cost so far to $440 billion. The spending request marks a 20% increase over last year, despite plans to draw down U.S. troop levels. The spending is now approaching the cost of the Korean War. Meanwhile, the cost of the overall war on terror, already close to half a trillion, and will soon equal that of the 13-year-long Vietnam War. White House budget officials said some of the extra spending would go towards keeping military equipment going in the desert. That's a good idea. And to give U.S. troops better protection against roadside bombs. The budget request, as you probably have already learned, does not include any more money for reconstruction. Don Rumsfeld once predicted the Iraq War would cost $50 billion. That's because he's not allowed to lie. George Bush's former economic advisor, Lawrence Lindsay, was forced to resign for being alarmist after predicting 4 years ago that the war would cost $200 billion. It's now reached $250 billion. But don't tell Lawrence Lindsay. And Dateline Baghdad, Iraqi efforts to form a government are only now beginning in earnest, according to the Associated Press, nearly 2 months after elections, and the hard bargaining could take weeks, if not months, to produce a new leadership. That could delay the eventual drawdown of U.S. forces. American diplomats are putting intense pressure on the Iraqis to agree quickly on a government. Until it's in place, it's unlikely that the United States and its coalition partners can pull out some of the 160,000-strong force. Major roadblocks stand in the way of a new deal for new government. You remember him, Major Roadblocks. And thus for any drawdowns in troops. It's unfinished business on the new Constitution and deep distrust fanned by tit-for-tat killings. Quote, I can't predict a timetable for forming the government, says a senior Kurdish politician, Mahmoud Othman. All these important points need thorough study. If they can't reach an agreement, he says, then there will be a problem. Unquote. Fortunately, we don't have a problem yet. Deadline Dubai, guerrilla attacks in Iraq have forced the cancellation of more than 60% of water and sanitation projects in Iraq, in part because American intelligence failed to predict the brutal insurgency. This according to a U.S. government audit. American goals to fix Iraq's infrastructure will never be reached, mainly because insurgents have chased away contractors and forced the diversion of repair funds into security. This according to the audit of the Iraq Relief and Reconstruction Program released last week. The rise of Iraq's insurgency was never envisioned by U.S. officials, who originally budgeted about 9% of reconstruction aid for project security. Now it's up to 22%. Planners envisioned, quote, a much more permissive security environment than that experienced in 2004 and 2005. Pre-invasion, U.S. intelligence said guerrilla attacks were likely, but nobody predicted anything of this magnitude in terms of resistance, says an analyst with the Middle East Institute. And in part, he adds, the magnitude of the resistance was spurred by our failures in reconstruction. Unquote, it's a perfect system. You're welcome.
I can only give you love that lasts forever, and the promise to be near each time you call. And the only heart I own for you and you alone. That's all, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love who burning light will warm the winter night. That's all, that's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all. That's
some vinyl today, good old fashioned vinyl that I can play. Stylus in the groove, Richard Holmes on Hammond organ makes me wanna move to someplace higher. I think I'll walk on over to race. Try to focus in on two better days. Say at Birdland, sounding truly grand. I'm checking out the vinyl today. Sure, I play CDs, they're not one of my obsessions. I've got plenty stacked on the shelf, but my clean LPs are amongst my prized possessions. Sounding nice and warm. Vinyl
chase my blues away. I'm searching for some vinyl today. Sliding, promising the best for the world. As for little old me, I'm not interested in hiding. I miss a little hit. Out the vinyl, chase my blues away. I'm searching for some vinyl today. Good old fashioned vinyl.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the apologies of the week. Won't you?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yes, I think you will. First, this one I'm sure you know about already. Washington Capitol Police dropped a charge of unlawful conduct against anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan this week and apologized for ejecting her and a congressman's wife from the State of the Union address for wearing T-shirts with messages both pro, in the case of the congressman's wife, and anti, in the case of Cindy Sheehan, the war. Hey, I think you'd be apologizing to people that you made stay at that speech, but that's just me. The officers made a good faith but mistaken effort to enforce an old unwritten interpretation of the prohibitions about demonstrating in the Capitol, said Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor. He's a gainer. This is such a tangent, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not even going to go on it, but gainers. It's an interesting subculture. Quote, the policy and procedures were far too vague, he added. The failure to adequately prepare the officers is mine. Dateline, Irvine, California. The chief executive of UC Irvine Medical Center has resigned, and the medical school dean was placed under an administrator. Ouch! That's gotta hurt. As Chancellor Michael Drake moved to clean up the crisis caused by misrepresentations to transplant patients and regulators. Drake, who's been in charge of UC Irvine for just 7 months, issued a broad apology to those misled, confused, or otherwise served poorly by statements or activities by anyone representing the university. We recognize that recent issues at UCI Medical Center are a result of a breakdown in the application of the values that must drive every decision made at the medical center and the entire UCI campus, his statement says. I apologize on behalf of the entire institution to every patient, family, government agency, community member, or UCI faculty, staff member, or student who may have been misled, confused, or otherwise served poorly. And thanks to my lawyers for carefully crafting the encyclopedic nature of this apology, he might have added. The leader of a campaign to cheer up German citizens has been forced to apologize after dismissing blogs as, quote, the toilet walls of the internet. Hey, without toilet walls, you're doing it out in the open. Jean-Remy von Matt, the head of the leading German advertising agency, Jung von Matt, fired off a furious internal email to colleagues after his Du bist Deutschland campaign was criticized by the media and by bloggers. What on earth gives every computer owner the right to exude his opinion unasked for? And most bloggers really just exude, he wrote. His email quickly became one of the most searched for items on the web, at least in German, and he was forced to issue an apology, sending an email to prominent German bloggers. "My mother taught me something," he wrote. "If you make a mistake, apologize. I was agitated, and I wrote an email to my colleagues who had worked hard for months on the campaign and deserved some encouragement against the criticism, justified or unjustified." More on James the Liar Fry. James Fry rhymes with lie. His publisher, Doubleday, still smarting from its initial defense of Fry's best-selling Fraud, A Million Little Pieces, is running an advertisement in USA Today apologizing to readers. The ad, which also will run in the February 6th edition of Publishers Weekly, says that future book editions will have notes from the publisher and from Fry himself. That Fry note apologizes to his readers and seeks to explain why he fabricated and embellished descriptions of his past experiences, because it made a better book, he says. He acknowledges that he, quote, "embellished many details about my past experiences and altered others in order to serve what I felt was the greater purpose of the book. I sincerely apologize to readers who may have been disappointed by my actions." Apparently didn't have root canal without anesthesia, as he claims in the book. He concludes by writing that, quote, "I am deeply sorry to any readers who I have disappointed." Good grammar, babe. "And I hope these revelations will not alter their faith in the book's central message, that lying can make you a million..." No, that's not the central message. You can go buy an ad to send a central message. Or send a telegram. No, you can't. He can't send a telegram to send a central message anymore. Dateline Bridgeport, Connecticut. Former Connecticut State Senator Ernest Newton, once one of the state's top minority leaders, was sentenced this week to 5 years in prison and 3 years probation for accepting a $5,000 bribe. And on other charges, Newton apologized to his family and community before he was sentenced, but the judge, Alan Nevis, rejected the notion that he simply made a mistake. Said the judge, "You wanted to make money." Oh, now that's a crime? Excuse me. And of course, you know about these apologies, ladies and gentlemen, but they must be included. Dateline Copenhagen, a Danish newspaper this week issued an apology to Muslims for publishing cartoons considered blasphemous by Muslims. Are you curious about them? Here they are. Look. See? There's this one. And there's... Don't get mad at me, Muslims. I'm just showing them on the radio. And then there's this one. Okay? So that's what all the fuss is about. The drawings, quote, "were not in violation of Danish law, but have undoubtedly offended many Muslims, which we would like to apologize for," says the newspaper's editor-in-chief, Carsten Just. He said that in a statement posted on the newspaper's website, probably in Danish. Although the characters were published last September, anger over them has spread this month through Muslim countries, prompting boycotts of Danish goods. Let's see, that would include, what, Bang & Olufsen speakers? What? Masked gunmen briefly seized a European Union office in Gaza City to protest the caricatures. No, Denmark has a dairy that distributes dairy foods in Saudi Arabia, okay? And Norway. The chief editor of a Norwegian Christian weekly that recently published the caricatures in a gesture of solidarity said in an interview that he regretted the publication. "Of course I regret that we have subjected Norwegian citizens to threats as well as myself and my family," chief editor Verbjorn Selbeck said. "On the other hand, I don't regret exercising my constitutionally protected freedom of speech." What, now Norwegians have a constitution? Norway's Deputy Foreign Minister Raymond Johansen also apologized during a visit to Lebanon. "We understand that Muslims found the caricature of the Prophet Muhammad atrocious, and we apologize," he said in Beirut. And not apologizing, but lining up, if this in fact be a dispute between religious sensitivities and freedom of speech, the American State Department has lined up on the side of religious sensitivity. America, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph, has sided with tens of thousands of Muslims who protested worldwide about those cartoons. In its first comment on the furor, the State Department said, quote, "These cartoons are indeed offensive to the belief of Muslims." Answering a reporter's question, State Department spokesman Curtis Cooper said, quote, "We all fully respect freedom of the press and expression, but it must be coupled with press responsibility. Inciting religious or ethnic hatred in this manner is not acceptable. Fiery sermons were preached in mosques in several European cities. One radical imam living in Norway, there's that country again, said, quote, "These drawings are a declaration of war." The largest protests were in Sudan. Hey, they're doing good work down there. And thanks to the president for mentioning Darfur in the State of the Union and in the Palestinian territories. Protesters in Ramallah chanted, "Bin Laden, our beloved, Denmark must be blown up." Well, it's a small target. You could say that. Ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week and addenda. The apologies are copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The addenda, just yours to enjoy. This is the show, and ladies and gentlemen, we've dealt already with New Orleans and the odd little clerical anomaly that caused its drowning, but there is also this. Despite ample warning of an impending catastrophe, the federal government bungled its response to Hurricane Katrina because of a void of leadership. How could that happen with the adults in charge? And confusion about who was in charge. It was the grown-ups. That was it. This according to an independent investigation ordered by Congress. The Government Accountability Office, in its preliminary report, faulted Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff as well as former FEMA head Mike Brown for not filling a crucial leadership role during Hurricane Katrina. The void, quote, serves to underscore the immaturity of and weaknesses relating to the current national response framework. No one was designated in advance to lead the overall federal response, despite clear warnings from the National Hurricane Center. The spokespeople for Chertoff and Homeland Security could not be reached. A part of the problem was a late and incomplete activation of the new National Response Plan and a lack of understanding of it. Yeah, we got a plan, we just don't know what the hell it means. The GAO also faulted Homeland Security for not following up on the training exercises, including the Hurricane Pam exercise, which kind of predicted what was going to happen. The funding for a follow-up to Pam was cut by Homeland Security officials last year. While Homeland Security and FEMA were not ready, the report said other federal agencies were, including the post office. So next time there's a big storm, call your mailman. Now to the State of the Union message regarding a new energy future for the country. That's right. Just a year after passing an energy bill that was 4 or 5 years in the making and that basically called for more drilling, more oil, President Bush has now done a rhetorical 180, pledging a 22% funding increase for clean energy programs. Should be pointed out, since fiscal 2002, funding for research and development in energy efficiency shrank by 14%. So just about making up. And in his follow-up speeches around the country to plug his State of the Union address, President flew around the country on Air Force One, a jet that gets less than 1 mile per gallon, as well as a huge C-17 aircraft packed with the limo and helicopter, that gets even worse mileage than the 747. The chopper's mileage, 0.014 miles per gallon. And once on the ground, of course, it's a Cadillac convoy. Limos get 18 in the city. Bush's 700-mile trip to give his State of the Union encore speech in Nashville cost $19,000 in fuel alone just for Air Force One, according to the New York Daily News. And one day after the president vowed to reduce America's dependence on Middle East oil by cutting imports from there 75% by 2025, his energy secretary said the president didn't mean it, literally. What the president meant, the economic advisor and energy secretary said in a conference call with reporters, was that alternative fuels could displace an amount of oil imports equivalent to most of what America is expected to import from the Middle East in 2025. But America would still import oil from the Middle East, they said, because that's where the oil is. The president's State of the Union reference to Mideast oil made headlines nationwide Wednesday because of his assertion that America is addicted to oil and his call to, quote, break this addiction. Bush pledged to move beyond a petroleum-based economy and make our dependence on Middle Eastern oil a thing of the past. This was purely an example, Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman said. He acknowledged that oil is a freely traded commodity bought and sold globally by private firms. Consequently, it would be very difficult to reduce imports from any single region, especially the most oil-rich region on Earth. Asked why the president used the words the Middle East when he didn't really mean them, One administration official said Bush wanted to dramatize the issue in a way that every American sitting out there listening to the speech understands. The official spoke only on condition of anonymity because he feared that his remarks might get him in trouble. I wouldn't worry. But the thrust of the message remains, of course, ladies and gentlemen. In the president's words, America is addicted to oil. Of course, he should put that in a form that everybody sitting out there listening to the speech can understand, don't you think?
You know what problem's rising faster than an overdose of yeast? It's the way that we depend on the bad old Middle East. It's full of sheiks and Shiites. Keep things on the boil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. Believe me when I tell you, addiction is no fun. It always ends up leading to a foreigner and a gun. Why don't we bring our problems home to native soil? Never gonna do it while we're addicted to oil. No, never gonna do it while we're addicted to oil. Just get me right, don't get me wrong. There's a reason why I didn't see the truth for so long. 'Cause I'm an oil man, just an oil man. My pie hole was just a dry hole. Sometimes you kick the habit, sometimes it kicks back. So I'm not gonna promise we'll always stay on track. Why have the turkey cold when you can set it to broil? Can't say that I don't love it, we're addicted to oil. Yeah, can't say that I don't love it, we're addicted to oil. Fill her up, boys. There's no blood in a turnip. You can't pee up a rope. The minute that we started, we were on that slippery slope. The problem with solutions is they take too much toil. It's like a kind of sickness, we're addicted to oil. It's like a kind of sickness, we're addicted to oil. Just get me right, don't get me wrong. There's a reason why I didn't see the truth for so long. 'Cause I'm an oil man.
Oil man.
Just an oil man. Yeah, my pie hole was like a dry hole. My problem's rising faster than an overdose of yeast. It's the way that we depend on that bad old Middle East. It's full of sheiks and Shiites who keep things on the boil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. Lord, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. You know it hurts so much to say it, we're addicted to oil.
Que lhe disse, amar é tolice, é bobagem, ilusão. Eu prefiro viver tão sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Doralice, eu bem que lhe disse, olha essa embrulhada em que eu vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Doralice, eu bem que lhe disse, amar é tolice, é bobagem, ilusão. E eu prefiro viver tão sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Doralice, eu bem que lhe disse, olha essa embrulhada em que eu vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Um belo dia você me surgiu. Eu quis fugir, mas você insistiu. Alguma coisa bem que andava me avisando. Até parece que eu estava adivinhando. Bem que eu não queria me casar contigo. Bem que eu não queria enfrentar esse perigo, Doralice. Agora você tem que me dizer como é que nós vamos fazer. Se é bobagem, ilusão. Prefiro viver sozinho ao som do lamento do meu violão. Doralice, eu bem que lhe disse. Olha essa embrulhada em que eu vou me meter. Agora, amor, Doralice, meu bem, como é que nós vamos fazer? Um belo dia você me surgiu. Eu quis fugir, mas você insistiu. Alguma coisa bem que andava me avisando. Até parece que eu estava adivinhando. Eu bem que não queria me casar contigo. Bem que eu não queria enfrentar esse perigo, Doralice. Agora você tem que me dizer como é que nós vamos fazer.
This is Le Show, and I rarely do this, but I left out one of the apologies. Isn't that wild? Dateline Berlin, a German newspaper, has apologized for accidentally placing a utility company advertisement for, quote, the gas of tomorrow, unquote. You know where this is going. Inside a full-page story on the Nazi killing of gypsy people in Auschwitz. The Landeszeitung Lunenburg said on its website it had not noticed that the article about a local exhibition describing the fate of the gypsies in Hitler's Germany appeared on the same page as an advertisement for utility company E.ON, which read, E.ON is taking care of the gas of tomorrow today. The paper, which has received numerous complaints about the position of the advertisement, said it deeply regretted the incident, which was unintentional and simply overlooked. We apologize for this mistake, which both contradicts the article's intention of shedding light on an almost forgotten chapter of National Socialism and also undeservedly casts the utility in a questionable light. Unquote. So I guess it did happen. Ladies and gentlemen, you might want to get scared for a moment. The life sciences are developing so quickly, according to New Scientist magazine, that a watch list of dangerous pathogens and toxins is useless in fighting the threat of bioterrorism. This from the National Academy of Sciences. A report on next-generation bioterrorism was requested by the U.S. government. Oh, well, that's okay then. It concludes that intelligence agencies are too focused on specific lists of bacteria and viruses and are not aware of emerging threats. That doesn't sound like our intelligence agencies. The concentration on the UN Oil for Food program during Saddam Hussein's reign there has focused almost entirely on corruption, alleged corruption at the United Nations, which was administering the Oil for Food program, and specifically the son of Kofi Annan, Kojo. You got to call him something. But we learned this week that the largest amount of money kicked back to the Iraqi government during the Oil for Food program was kicked back by Russia, China, France, Australia, ladies and gentlemen. I bow to no one in my love of Australia, but Australia. The coal inquiry is what's looking into it. The Australian Wheat Board, which is the monopoly seller of Australian wheat abroad, paid $300 million. That's Australian dollars, but still. And the inquiry is going to widen into including another company, Australia's largest resources company, BHP Billiton. And the scope of the inquiry may also include the Australian government itself. The allegation is that the Australian Wheat Board paid $300 million in kickbacks disguised as trucking fees. That's how I'd disguise them. I don't know about you. A former senior executive of the Australian Wheat Board detailed a culture of regular bribes and kickbacks to foreign governments to secure Australian wheat sales. Mark Emmons told the inquiry there was no doubt within the organization that fees to the Jordanian trucking company were a way to guarantee business with Iraq. He said in a memo which was released to the head of the Australian Wheat Board, we should be accommodating to the Iraqis so that our business does not come under threat from our U.S. or Canadian Wheat Board friends. A culture of bribery and kickbacks. Hey, at least they got culture. You know what I'm saying? And the scandal also involves photographs. Not unlike the Jack Abramoff scandal. The Australian newspaper The Age published photographs of the former Australian Wheat Board chairman Trevor Flugie with a pistol pointed at the camera walking around Iraq, shirtless. And global sales chief Michael Long with a high-powered assault rifle, says Australian Prime Minister John Howard asked about the photographs. They weren't in a strict sense representing Australia, in a diplomatic sense. He's making sense. I know that it looks bad. I know that looks silly and it's very unhelpful. But did I know about it? Would everybody who's ever been overseas on behalf of Australia or an Australian company agree to every photograph of them being published? He asks. Maybe not. Maybe the Australians abroad, like the Fijians think when they come to Fiji, are a hazard. He declined to say what he thought the picture said about the quality of the people. The pictures, of course, have been published, much like the cartoons. So all we need now is the pictures of Jack Abramoff with George W. Bush. We can wrap this whole picture and cartoon thing up for the year. Ladies and gentlemen, it used to be important what the people on television who brought us our news knew, what they knew. Now it's important that they care. They care about us, of course. They've been caring about us since Eyewitness News started. But now they care, well, they care about the Gulf. Brian Williams and Anderson Cooper care about the Gulf Coast. They don't know a lot about it. They haven't reported the story of what's behind the levee breaches, but they care, you see. That's what's important. So it's important for us to know what it is they care about. One of the things they care about is what's the lead story on each other's newscast. Tuesday, it was either going to be the State of the Union Address or the death of Coretta Scott King. Here's Bob Schieffer from our Found Objects Department.
We'll get to the President's State of the Union speech shortly, but first to Byron Pitts and Mrs. King's life and legacy. Others leave the same thing? Hey, what the others leave?
I think.
NBC Group. NBC with Coretta, ABC with State of the Union. I'm good with this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Me too. And Brian Williams also cared.
So, John, what's going on? Talk to me about X and Y tonight. CBS, is that right? Huh. That's fascinating. Huh. Well, good for CBS for going along with us on the lead story. Huh.
Hmm. So, don't care what they know. Just know that they care. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to put the finishing touch, the absolute maraschino cherry on the top of this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet on your computer at two different locations whenever you want it, live or archived, harryshear.com or kcrw.com. Available at channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. And available as a podcast. For goodness sake, what more can we do? At kcrw.com. And it would be just like getting off our addiction. Whatever it is. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Whatever happens. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized, believe it or not, around the world, or as Wolf Blitzer likes to say, around the world, as the home of the homeless.